Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Send them emails, it'll be all the kids in assembly screaming my name. That fills me with absolute love and pride. Like, I mean, like nothing else. And I want to inspire them. I'm just a normal boy from Andy Town. Like.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball. With Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Paint March Green with Cadbury.
Welcome along to another episode of The Green Scene. Live from Prague. It is the morning after Ireland's defeat to Czechia in the World Cup playoffs. But unfortunately, it still feels like the night before here, lads. It's early doors really in the morning, so it kind of is. It still feels like the night before. I mean, we're going to get into everything over the course of the next hour or so, but a truly agonising loss for Ireland on penalties in Prague yesterday evening. 2-0 up, 25 odd minutes into the game and absolutely cruising. And then Ireland let Czechia back into the game with a Patrick Sheehy penalty in the 26th minute, and then 4 minutes from time, captain Ladislav Krejci sends us extra time. We go all the way to penalties. Cuimhin Kelleher saves a penalty, and we go 3-2 up, and we think this could be it. And then unfortunately, he misses from Finn Azaz and Alan Brown. Mean that Czech, yeah, will be playing Denmark in Prague on Tuesday. I'm with David Wilson, I'm with Matthew Brennan. Lads, how are you getting on?
Yeah, I've definitely had better mornings when I've been on trips outside of the country. Like, yeah, it is. I think the words we were speaking to, we can get into our different experiences of the night in a couple of minutes. But myself and David were speaking to a lot of you guys out in the streets of Prague last night, and despite there was actually a lot of, I don't want to use the word hope so early, but a lot of. Praise for the players and people were delighted to be here and all that sort of stuff. I think the words that were most commonly used were heartbreaking and devastating. And I think that's pretty much the way I would describe it too. I'm not sure about yourself, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it feels like we haven't really even slept on it yet because we basically haven't slept. We were working late last night. And literally came in, blinked, woke up again and are going again. But yeah, it's kind of hard to process.
It is, yeah.
You have like so many, I guess, dreams and ideas of what things would be like, and look forward to another big game next Tuesday, and then hopefully then like a tournament after that. But it feels like a real missed opportunity, and. Yeah, it's just.
I think there will be regrets, and we can get into all of that. But I was talking to a couple of people last night, and as somber as this might sound, I think when you're in these qualifying campaigns, it's been quite some time since we've actually felt like we were properly in with a chance in a qualifying campaign that didn't end maybe after two or three games. And but we did manage to work our way back into it and get to this to this point. When you lose a game like that in the context of the World Cup, it does almost feel, it feels like a death, like a loss. Like we're mourning something here that we're not going to get the chance to. So some players will never get the chance to sort of. Overcome with Ireland, you know, we'll never get the chance to put things right. And as you said, I think there'll be regrets with the way it panned out last night, despite a brilliant effort all round.
Yeah, so just before we get into it, just say the Green Scene on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic Ireland football teams. Paint March Green. And March was painted green by Irish fans here in Prague over the last couple of days. I mean, our experience here in Prague over the last few days, it's really been outstanding. The old town and city centre has been absolutely covered with Irish fans, especially yesterday afternoon. We got here early on Wednesday morning. Matthew made his own way, which we might touch on briefly, but it's covered across the Off the Ball socials. Matthew's pilgrimage to Prague. Myself and David were lucky enough to get here early on Wednesday morning, and the atmosphere was kind of building slowly over the course of the day, and then I suppose it really hit top form at night, but especially yesterday, kind of right from the morning, the whole way up until the game, the city centre here was absolutely hopping, and I did have that feeling of, oh God, we might do them, will we? We might do them. But so look at the positives first. It's been amazing to see that belief and everyone really get behind the team and support the team and lift off. And David, I know you said it when we were on the plane out Wednesday morning. You said, "Oh God, we really are a footballing nation," and that's how it's felt like over the last couple of days. It's you haven't been able to turn a corner in Prague and not hear Irish voices everywhere you went. Like for everyone who's at home and is looking at all the videos, the thousands of videos of fans being interviewed out in the streets. That's literally him.
Because I want to let you jump in on that. Because, but I was on breakfast the other morning, and I was talking about that exact thing. That it's one of the few occasions where you can look on social media and actually take it for what it is.
Yeah,
like, it's exactly what it's been like. It's very early in the morning over here in Prague as we're recording this, and I was making my way over to you guys. Obviously, I'm staying a little bit up the road, and as you can imagine, there's not a whole lot going on in the streets. There's no shops open, there's no cafes open, nothing like that just yet. And I came across an Irish guy just wandering around, taking it all in. So people are really around every corner, you know?
Yeah. I think this week has kind of proved to me that, we are a footballing nation. Which for me, I think is great. But I always nearly look jealously upon South American nations or the Dutch, when they go to major tournaments, or sometimes the Germans as well, they really get behind their teams. And okay, Ireland, we've had the tradition of doing it as well, but it kind of seemed to fall away just with the team maybe not doing as well as, obviously the glory years of 2002 and Italia 90 and USA 94 and Euro 88 and all that. So yeah, it feels like this is a moment, and to have that moment kind of taken away from us now is really, it's gut-wrenching, really. And I can't imagine, obviously we feel very disappointed, and all the fans do too that are here, and all the people back home. But I really feel for the players this morning, because I think they deserved to go and do something special again. So
before we just jump into the game, I left where we'd been watching the game feeling incredibly low and down, as I imagine majority of people did, and going into the centre of Prague and catching up with some of the fans, it did kind of bring me round, almost like not immediately, and it's hit me again now this morning that we're kind of have time with our own thoughts, but to really let it sink in. But there's incredible buy-in, I think, to this team, and there's an incredible kind of attachment that people have now found with Irish football once again, and a generation of people who have maybe not enjoyed the successes of the generations that came before. And even though it is as horrible as it is now, and it's going to feel like that for quite some time, especially on Tuesday, and especially then when the tournament does come around to the World Cup during the summer. But I don't want to be saying, look, there's positives, because it's hard to find positives in a morning like this. But I really think there's something has clicked over the course of the last couple of months, whatever that's happened, and hopefully it's a prolonged thing and not just a flash in the pan, which I don't think it will be.
Yeah, it's funny, because a lot of these players were given their debuts by Stephen Kenny, and it felt like there was a real buy-in and a backing to these young players who are in the squad, but now we're kind of seeing the fruitions of that labour put in under Stephen Kenny, and it's funny, almost overnight really, with those games against Hungary and Portugal, that the buy-in has just shot through the roof.
That's what international football is, really. Yeah. It doesn't need to be a big, long, kind of drawn out thing. You just have to time it right, and it felt as though this was the right time, but not to be.
We'll get straight into the game, I suppose, because that's what a lot of people are going to be here for.
Please don't click off. It's going to be painful, but sometimes you have to put yourself through.
We have to get through this together.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we're all.
We have to get through it. So this is exactly our coping mechanism.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate enough to be in the Fortuna Arena last night. Got there about 2.5 hours early. The entrance is via McDonald's, which is absolutely hilarious. Quite literally, they close off a corner of McDonald's, and that is where the press pack walked through, which is a hilarious thing to take part in. Quite nice media facilities, to be honest. They lovely Czech baguettes put out for us.
Wouldn't mind a Czech baguette, yeah.
Yeah, with certain stuff put inside it. A lot of refreshments laid out for you. The press conference room is basically right beside the entrance to
to go out to your seat, which is something I haven't seen before. It's literally you if you were sitting in your seat and you turn back and look inside, the press conference room is literally right behind you. But yeah, we got out and immediately, as soon as we get into the stadium, about 2 hours before kickoff, like I'd say 2/3 of the away end over in the far corner opposite us were already full, and you could hear them fine voice already. And slowly and slowly over the course of the next half an hour, you'd see little dots of green popping up around the stadium, and slowly and slowly they make their way 5 seats closer to the away end, 10 seats closer to the away end, and all of a sudden you basically had either side of the away end in the Fortuna Arena just covered in green as well. And I know there was some debate before about maybe Irish fans wouldn't be able to let in. They were well and truly able to get into the home end last night. The atmosphere was brilliant right before kickoff. There was a couple of red empty seats dotted throughout the stadium. I don't know if that was clear.
One particular section behind one of the goals looked very empty.
Yeah, it's strange.
It's strange. I know there's not really a buy-in to the Czech team. Here in Czechia, we've found over the last couple of days, this nowhere near the same levels that we have anyway, back at home. But still, right before kickoff, they dim the lights and the fireworks go off. And really, the place was happening. They did a big TIFO up behind the goal and it did. It felt like a huge game as soon as it kicked off. It really did. It was that hairs in the back of the neck kind of stuff inside the stadium. You two were down in
We're down around the centre. Yeah, I actually went and got a bit of breakfast down there yesterday morning after being on off the ball breakfast actually, and hung around there for a while with a couple of my mates, and actually kind of posted up in the one place for the majority of the day, and met David. Well, actually met both of you at one point during the day, and you obviously had to go and get ready for the game. Me and you hung around, chatted to a few fans, and then we're seemed as though it was all rosy in the garden as kickoff approached.
Yeah, it was all rosy in the garden, but yeah, the TV stopped working.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm getting to. Yeah.
So we decided we left there, and where we broadcasted from on Wednesday night in Sally O'Neill's, we went there and managed to watch the game there in a nice bit of peace and quiet and company with a few beverages on hand.
Yeah, not too quiet though.
No,
you know.
No, it was a nice
mix between being able to watch the match and a good atmosphere.
Yeah, really. For sure. Yeah. Yeah, and that was a very last minute thing as well. We only headed there maybe an hour before kickoff. So
So the game kicks off and immediately, I mean, John Shea and Hamer Hallgrimsson spoke during the week about not having to go gung-ho from kickoff. Ireland essentially did go gung-ho from kickoff, and we really took this game by the scruff of the neck in the opening couple of minutes. Nathan Collins has a deflected effort off the bar, just I think it's inside the opening 10 minutes, and there was a real feeling inside the stadium of, you know, we're going to do these.
I remember thinking after the first 10 minutes, I was like, geez, that was a good as 10 minutes that we've ever had as a start to the game, maybe without scoring. Like, I couldn't tell you the last time we played like that. But we actually came and like asserted ourselves, looked comfortable, looked decent on the ball, put some passes together, played in the right areas, and you're just thinking, God, wow, like this is, like, have we turned into a good team here?
Because this is the thing as well, when we had all the anticipation going into the Hungary game at the very beginning of the qualifiers, and we went out and sitting up in the Aviva that day, after about 20 minutes, we're 2-0 down.
Yeah.
And the whole energy of the place has just been sucked out of the place.
Yeah.
And it's slightly different, obviously, with this being an away game. But I feel like the players really met the occasion for the first half really, despite a moment of madness that I'm sure we'll get onto.
So Ireland, as we said, start the game excellently, and eventually the fruits of that labour wore off as Ireland were, well, there was a foul on Nathan Collins in the box, or it seemed quite an innocuous foul in the 16th minute. And eventually, after a lengthy delay, the play carries on for a few more minutes. The referee is called over by VAR to have a look at it. We were having a look at it inside the stadium, and a lot of us in the Irish kind of press thought, oh, that'll be a bit soft if that was given. No complaints from the Czech media about it. But Vladimir Dereed obviously collides with Nathan Collins, as we know, and the penalty is given. Up steps Troy Parrott. Close enough.
It's a smashing penalty.
To Matija Kovács, who obviously we know very much of now, his penalty saving technique, as we found out towards the course night. Do you have any doubts when Troy stepped up to that penalty in normal time?
No, I had no doubts that he'd score. The thing is, though, I thought it was a harsh penalty. Like, it's one of those ones where
you'd be sick if it was given against us.
Given against us, you're like, that is, it's harsh. But look, Collins gets his toe to the ball just first, and Derrida just kind of kicks underneath the bottom of his foot. Like, but it's not much. Like, that is only a penalty in the age of VAR. If there's no VAR, like, who cares? And I don't even think, I said this last night as well, that Collins didn't even do a great job of selling it. Like, selling it is like clutch you hold your foot,
you stay down
for minutes and minutes and minutes, and you force the referee and the officials to look at it. He did stay down for a bit, and then he got back up, obviously, because he was like, right, I need to get back into my position. And then after that, you kind of think, right, that moment's gone. And then all of a sudden, then, on where we were on the bottom of the screen, it's like potential penalty check. And when it goes that way, you're like, right, it's going to be given. And then when it was given, no doubt that Troy Parrott was gonna finish it, and just set us on our way. And at that, we all turned around, like the people that we were with, we all turned around to each other. We said, don't stop, keep doing what we're doing, keep playing. Like, the thing is that you have to just keep playing the way you're playing. Don't go and sit behind the ball. Take the initiative, and I think they really did that.
And that's the main thing, because we were kind of all played out every single different scenario that possibly could have happened in our heads before the game kicked off, and one of them was that there's the potential there for us to fly out of traps. You know, things aren't all smooth in the world of Czech football. We could get at them early. That's what we did. We went 1-0 up, and the fear was that we would retreat and say, come at us, which is what happened eventually, but didn't happen immediately. And you're right. Like, we built on it, and we said, right, okay, we've got one. Let's get another.
I remember when we scored that goal. I think it was De Lugbene get down the right hand side and pull one back at one stage.
Yeah.
I think Parrott was running through.
I think Parrott and his eyes were there, just behind
the pair. Pulled up behind the two of them, and I thought, I was like, oh, we have such a chance here. Yeah. Like, we can get at these so easily, and Benny was causing them serious problems again. Excellent again for Ireland, but
we'll get on to what happened. But that goal goes in the 19th minute, and you know, it's funny, we're pretty much directly, the press box is slightly to the left of the centre circle, so we're pretty much directly opposite the Ireland fans. They're sent into absolute raptures, and it's funny because you see the dots all around the home end going mental, and no problems from the Czech people. It was kind of like almost nice to see just a bit of respect, and it was the same when the Czechs scored. Like, you know, we're in your home end, like we're not going to get angry. There was nothing like there was no malice among any fans, but they go into absolute chaos over in the corner, and I had that feeling of, oh God, we're better than these. We're going to do these, and then 4 minutes later, a Ryan Manning delivery to the back corner from a corner. Darrow Shea heads it back across. It's quite a comical then. A couple of events where Vladimir Soufal heads it back towards his own goal. Cannons off the crossbar, off Matej Kovač, and into the back of the net, and slightly over the line. The referee blows.
Do we even know it was over the line? I didn't see it. You did have a feeling
of in the stadium, to be honest, straight away.
Yeah. Right.
Like, everyone kind of went, that's over the line. Yeah. And it's funny, right? So I've jumped slightly, because right after the first goal goes in, the Ireland fans go into like descendant mayhem, and the rest of the stadium falls quiet for about 10 seconds. And then the noise was louder than it was before kickoff.
Oh, really?
And it was like, you know, that's exactly what the Aviva would do.
Yeah.
And it did feel like, right, yes, we are better than these, but they'll get behind these. They're not going to drop off.
Yeah.
As soon as that second goal goes in, it's silence.
And you could see it even with the reactions of the body language of some of the Czech players after that goal went in. The heads were kind of down. Kovar, obviously, with the nature of the goal, I'm sure, was kind of like, how has that happened? But he himself looked very dejected. And actually, just to say, like, it was a comical kind of way in which the ball went in, but it's a carbon copy of Troy Parrott's first goal against Portugal in the Aviva. It's the exact same set piece routine. Yeah. And funny enough, although it's not Troy Parrott who puts it in, he's the closest man in an Ireland shirt to the ball when it does go in. So, Czech, you'd probably be a little bit annoyed that they allowed that to happen. But at the same time, there's credit to be had there for the players and the coaching staff, just as something that I know.
I think Ireland's set pieces have really... I don't think they're ever really that bad in an attacking sense, maybe. traditionally, but I think in the last maybe 5-6 games have really stepped up again.
Yeah, there's more to it than just stick it up on the big line.
Of course then modern football is like set pieces and you know, all those like little fine margins count, and I think in international football as well that really does make a difference, because obviously you have such a limited time to work with a group of players. You have to make the most of what you have. On the delivery, it was excellent for Manning, and all his deliveries are pretty much bang on.
Yeah.
When the ball's going to the back post, Nathan Collins does such a great job. He just pins his man.
Yeah.
And it allows Daryl Shea just to get round the back, and he has it. Just all you're doing it there is just heading it back into an area and kind of hoping there's someone there. Obviously, Parrott was nearly there. Soufal has it off the crossbar, off the keeper, and into the back of the net. And after that, you're thinking, God, this is 2-0. But then you're also thinking, oh no, we're going to have to hold on to this.
That fear you had at 1-0 is even more pronounced at 2-0, because it's a bigger lead to hold on to, you know.
It's funny, when the second goal was in the stadium, we had a feeling of kind of, this is now a kick on. It was almost like that. Okay, it confirmed we are better than these.
Yeah.
We can actually outplay these, outscore these quite comfortably. And when the away fans go into chaos again and you don't see that lift up from the home crowd. It's funny, I was talking to a few people before kickoff, and everyone kind of had the same collective agreement of, if we get an early goal here, the sense of the already kind of sense of not hatred, but there's clearly been
there's angst
with the home fans and that team over the last couple of months. And you thought, if we can get an early goal here, this crowd could turn a little bit sour on them. And that is how it felt right after the second goal was in. And then Ireland, like, the most cliche thing in the book, you're at your most dangerous after score, and the most dangerous lead in football is a 2-goal lead.
Which it isn't, but anyway.
And 3 minutes later, it's a checky corner. The ball's gone out of play. And Ryan Manning's a four-star player who pulls back Ladislav Krejcik. And a penalty's given.
Just on that, what actually happened? Because on the TV, we literally were watching, and next thing we'd scored, and obviously you kind of have the celebrations and whatever, and then next thing it's like, oh, it's a corner. I was like, what was there like a switch play? Like, how did it go for a corner?
It's funny, I was going to ask you the question I watched on TV, because as soon as the goal goes in and you're up in the press box, you're scrambling to start writing down exactly what happened, and you're watching a replay, trying to get the exact movements of absolutely everything that happened, and who blocked who and everything.
I'm up at the correction file in the comments, but I think it was a cross that got blocked down.
They were hitting a lot of like floating crosses. But it's funny. Sorry, obviously the exact
not
same
stop
stadium.
Fouling, by the way.
Which, my God.
We will absolutely talk about and some really kind of amateur theatrics from some players,
Which is always going to happen after the early penalty, and that was something you pointed out.
And it did feel like something was going to be given the opposite way. And to be honest, look, I've seen people blame Manning for the shirt pull, and I think it is silly, but I don't think there's an awful lot in it. And I would wonder, look, as soon as he gives it, it's not going to be overturned. But I would wonder, is he so quick to give it if a penalty isn't given at the other end a couple minutes forward?
I think it's a stonewall penalty. I think Ryan Manning was good last night. I think he's had a very good campaign. I actually said, I think to you early on in the game, that he's one of our most improved players. We at the start of the campaign maybe was someone who we looked at and went, he's a good option, but we're not 100% sure on him. And I think now we're like, Ryan Manning, if he's starting, we're happy in one of the big games. We can trust him out there. Yeah. It was just, it was like, he would say this himself, I imagine, it was just a moment of madness. It was just one of them
he's
things.
Nowhere.
Yeah, and there's no need to do it. And it's to sit here and say that, it's so obvious, and he would say it himself too. But it's just one of them that, there's no thought. It's just a kind of
instinctive.
It's an instinct, exactly the word I'm looking for. Yeah, instinctive thing to do. And
is it instinctive though? Because like
because
you're like, you put your hand on his back and you pull the jersey, like that is like That's instinctive. Like, that's just more like a,
I think it's more just
panicking kind of thing.
I think it's a reactionary thing.
Yeah, but that's
the same way, you know, if you're
that is instinct. When you're panicking, your instinct is to do something that is not thought through. Like,
what I mean is, like, instinctive reaction in the sense of, think of Bernardo Silva's goal line block the other week for Manchester City against Real Madrid. When you're a player on the line and the ball's gone by and the keeper isn't there, you're just instinct to throw out the hand.
Yeah.
Like, it's that sort of instinctive reactionary. It's panic. The ball drops in the box here, you know, you're not thinking, he's drifting towards out of play, and you just move on it. And look,
you're disagreeing. Yeah. What are you saying? What's your point, you know?
Yeah, what is my point? I don't know. Like, it's instinctive as but he also, like, sometimes you put your hand on someone's back, like, and that's fine, like, that's instinctive movement. But then, like, to actually pull him, like, you're like, what's going through his head there?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's a conscious, like, thought that he's gone to do it. I think it's instinctive. He's in a state of panic where he's just like, just did it. And look, it doesn't excuse it. It doesn't excuse it. And you're obviously in the moment, you're not thinking, that's it. That's what's going to kill the game for us. But in a sense, I think I said at the time, it was something that I was more worried about what it would do to the Irish approach as opposed to what it would do for the Czechia team. And I think that proved to be the case. I think we really just retreated after that for the majority of the rest of the game. Now, we did have some chances after that. Obviously, Malumbi at the post.
After that goal goes in, how did it feel in the pub? Because in the stadium, as soon as the goal was in, their fans are bought back in, and it did. I can't really maybe explain it fully at the moment. It's still only a couple hours after the game is finished. But it did feel like we were home and hosed there. That this game was done if we lasted 10 minutes, but we've let them back in now, and we're going to be in for a dogfight for us this game now.
Yeah, I don't know if it did stay a 2-0, would we have felt home and hosed? Because, like, being Irish, your natural reaction is just to be pessimistic about everything. When the goal goes in, I remember saying to a few lads, I was like, we need, like, 2-1 at half time is brilliant for us now. Like let's just hold it. And I think we did hold it. Like, we weathered that storm after they got that goal back. And at times then we looked dangerous. There's a couple of chances where, again, Ogbeni was causing them serious problems in behind. I think there was one time where Parrott could have slipped someone in. And
he got ball stuck under his feet a little bit.
And you're like, right, like, there's definitely opportunities there for us to score. Like, we are, let's not panic. And I don't think the players did panic either. I actually think they did quite well from the conceding the goal till half time. And even at that, the Czechs, like, they didn't really create any other chances in that first half, I don't think.
There was the one
shot from Sulch that Kelleher saved.
Yeah, there was a lot of, and we saw this kind of.
I felt good about us.
Yeah,
even at that,
absolutely. And I think the back three of Collins, O'Shea, and O'Brien were excellent.
I think it was Dara O'Shea's best performance for Ireland, personally.
Yeah.
I know he was maybe slightly not at fault, but he was in the vicinity for the equaliser, which we'll get onto. But I thought he was phenomenal. And what he had to deal with there too, he was getting pinned and
with a big man, Thomas Shorey.
Yeah,
I thought he did a great job. What I thought as well, because they're even trying to, like, nearly target Manning sometimes. I thought Manning just kind of, because he's obviously smaller, he just body well, like, didn't let him get a clean header. Obviously, you're not going to win the ball all the time, where you might win the ball any time. I just thought he'd done a good job of just trying to affect him and, you know, affect the ball. But yeah, at half time, like, we're thinking, you're thinking, hopefully, that, like, we have to score the next goal.
Yeah, that was the one thing, I suppose, going in the second half, I really didn't want us to do. And it happens so much in football that you just naturally drop that 5 yards deeper and then another 5 yards deeper. And look, it happens. Just before we move on to the second half, should just comment, like, there was an awful lot of, once the penalty was given, he said, an awful lot of play acting and theatrics. There was one occasion where Thomas Horry goes down holding his face from a collision with Jacob Ryan, and Jacob Ryan doesn't even really realise he's gone down clutching his face because there was absolutely nothing in it. And he kind of runs off, and the referee comes up to Horry, and Horry's gone mad, he's holding his face, and he's like adamantly waving his arms at him.
Same thing happened. The exact same thing happened with Alan Brown in the second half, where one he kind of, I don't even know if he touched him at all. And he was down, I can't remember who it was, but he was down for ages. Actually, I thought, just a slight aside, I thought referee handled the game pretty well.
I thought he did. The only thing I thought, maybe there was no card for them until the 90
minutes. Yeah, that's a fair point, Joe.
Which I thought was a little bit strange considering the foul count and the amount of fouls that were happening. And the crowd were really kind of, the crowd felt like it was an unjust referee performance, but I don't think it was. I think it was a lot of those, like Quebec said he wanted to make it a war. Mm. Like that is exactly what they made. They made it battles. And you know, I spoke to Hamer after the game, and he actually said you have to give them credit for it. They said they were going to go out and do this, and they did it. Mm. And they kept that up throughout the game. They make the two changes at half time. Vladimir Darida, who he brought back into the team, comes out.
Yeah.
And Thomas Souček comes into midfield, and it completely changed. I don't think Souček had a brilliant game, but it completely changes the dynamic. Souček and Provo midfield goes away from this. I thought Dorita's a playmaker and he's a tidy footballer. He was kind of dropping in deep and he's playing these nice sideways passes. There was one pass in the first half where he actually broke both lines. He broke the midfield and defensive line. And I think it was quite early in the first half. And Patrick Sheik gets on the end of it and I kind of thought, oh, this is why he's called him back in. Mm. But then he was fairly anonymous. He was kind of a passing for us in the first half. But it changed the dynamic from that tidy footballer to this is how we're going to play this game. This is going to be a physical battle. Straight away from kickoff, it's a long ball up forward.
Yeah.
And they changed their game plan and it ended up playing off for them in the end.
I still think they're quite direct even in the first half. I think they were just playing more to the Thomas Shorey or whatever. I think Patrick Schick was pretty anonymous in open play. Souček comes on and... yeah, obviously a bit worried. I think he's the Czech leading scorer in Premier League history, whatever. But they changed the dynamic game. Did he really change the game? Like Ireland's defensive shape, I thought was really good. They got dropped back into like a nice back five, and the four in front of them were nice and narrow. And then you had power at the top of that, and I kind of felt like we were pretty comfortable even with that change in the game. And as the game went on, like, I don't remember Kelleher being stretched at all, really. There's one, he tips over the bar, I think, as well. In the second half. But even at that.
Schick and Krejci were in there together, I think it was Krejci goes ahead in it.
Even at that, I was thinking, like, I do fancy us to maybe be... I thought we were the more likely team to score, even if we didn't have the ball, the possession.
Yeah, it's an interesting read, and I suppose it's a difference in perception you have, depending on where you are and how you're taking the game in, but... I don't think the consensus from where we were was that about 20 minutes into the second half we were asking Souček on the pitch.
Yeah.
Now there's intangibles of the way the team changes and other players move in and become more effective as a result, but Souček's influence in the game, that's an interesting take. I don't know. I didn't think he had the impact that maybe you think. But
I don't think he was excellent himself, but it changed the way they played. I know they did go a little bit direct, but they really then, I suppose, bought into that kind of directness, and the physicality kind of, I thought, upped another notch as well, not just from him. It was like a message out across the board, basically.
I thought it was very interesting, like 60 minutes into the game, they're playing these sort of long balls into the box.
They're diagonal.
But that are, like, off the top of my head, akin to Quivey and Kelleher launching one in for Liam Scales to flick on and Troy Parrott to get on the end of. But they're doing this with 35 minutes to play. And I thought, this, as you say, it ended up being their approach, and we can say it ended up being their approach, and it was successful because in the end they did obviously end up going through, and that's the end goal. But at the time I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, maybe these are running out of ideas here.
Just before we get on to that stage of the game, there's a moment around 55 minutes into the game where Jason Malumbi smashes an effort from the edge of the box against the post. Jason Malumbi, before we get on to that effort, was absolutely brilliant last night.
Yeah. I think he was probably the best player on the pitch from an Irish perspective. I think he covered every blade of grass that was on that pitch last night. I thought when he needed to, he kept the ball well. I thought his positioning was excellent, and something that we've always questioned about Malumbi. Thought he marshalled in front of his back three, I suppose, excellently well. I thought, I was getting ready to hopefully, Ireland hold on and win the game, and I was getting ready to be like, just give him his flowers, because he's had such a tough time in an Ireland shirt, and I just thought he was brilliant. He led by example. He was a true leader on the pitch. He maybe came of age last night, and let's hope, from an Irish perspective, that this is his, you know, that these last couple of games are his way of kind of, he is the man in midfield alongside Josh Cullen whenever he does come back.
And we know he's got a smashing attitude as well, like just in the way he conducts himself, and it's why he's such a fan favourite at West Brom, in that despite the fact he can be rash at times and be a little bit frustrating, he never kind of backs down from anything. No. And that's what we've seen when he wasn't in the squad initially under Hamer, and he's another one of these who's come back in throughout the qualifying campaign. And I thought he got, I mentioned at the very start about the players for the first 25 minutes getting to measure the occasion really well. I thought he got the balance perfect, which is something that we would have questioned, whether he would kind of maybe go over the top a little bit as far as being up for the match goes. But no, I thought he was excellent. I thought he kept it simple when he needed to.
Yeah. I thought he was brave on the ball.
He was.
Getting the ball in tough positions.
At times, yeah, especially in the second half there. He went on a bit of a mazy run, which was, at the time, you're thinking, what are you doing? But yeah. It worked out for him on that occasion. And yeah, look, he's had his critics, and I'm happy for him to have played so well. But at the same time, he's not going to be thinking about that this morning. Definitely knowing the character he is, he's not going to be looking back at his own performance right now. You know, yeah, he was so unlucky. It was a cracking strike.
Yeah.
And how does that bounce off the post like that?
Yeah.
And not come through to
Benny?
Yeah, and Benny was actually, I think it was onside as well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
There was an angle from the side that we seen later, and I was like, how is that not bounced out to Benny?
Yeah. We were actually right in line, basically with the line. That's where our position was. And you know, he hits the post, and obviously split second, he goes, oh, but then it literally looked like the ball was going to, it should have dropped straight back to Ben, like I said. I think of Malumbi as well, is like, to use the saying, like, he is 100%, but he gets it. Like, he gets that everyone who's in the stands as an Ireland fan, if they were on the pitch, they would like to think that they'd give the effort that he gives, and he doesn't stop running all game. Like, his tank is on empty and he runs another tank.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't stop all game, and that run, I think, kind of epitomised it. I thought it was an easy pass on inside, but no, he goes through, he backs himself, goes down the line. And I really thought that would, it felt like, and the last couple of performances of Jason Malumbi have felt like kind of a coming of age in an Ireland shirt perspective for him, and like you said, David, like, solidifies his position in midfield. There's a spell after that Malumbi effort where you said you didn't feel, I spoke to you last night after the game when I got back, ended up being in the Fortuna Arena till the wee hours of the morning, and got back to Prague, and we were having a chat, and kind of the third quarter, I suppose, of the game, where it felt like in the stadium we were under the cosh, and I know they didn't have any clear cut chances, but the mood in the stadium felt like there's a goal coming here any second now.
Yeah,
I wouldn't quite, I would say from our point of view, you might disagree. I don't think it got to the point where there's a goal coming now, but there was definitely a sense of, we're dropping back here, we're really, really getting further and further into our box. But they're definitely, we definitely had the same feeling, but maybe not quite to that extent.
Yeah, so
no, like, I think I remember feeling like we're under the cosh here, but I remember also being encouraged by, like, they were crossing from the worst positions in the world. They were literally like, so you if you want to, like, cross the ball well, you want to get to either the byline, or you want to get, like, as further down the pitch and kind of ping it back. But they're crossing, like, 35 yards out, narrowish angles, and you're just watching
lofted,
Jake O'Brien
lofted,
just loaded in.
And Nathan Collins and Jake O'Brien and Darren Shea are looking, and they can see the ball, they can see where it's coming from, and they can just go and meet it. And if they're not, they can go and affect it. And then even at that, they're all facing an angle on the ball where they can get to the second ball, or someone can get to the second ball. So at the time, I was like, yeah, we are okay, we're struggling maybe to keep the ball, but I tell you what, I actually am encouraged by their lack of creativity. And obviously Solskjaer was, like, one of their more creative players, but I thought he was quite poor on the night. Okay, he hasn't been playing, but I was, yeah, even at that, like, I think that's just, it's hard to distinguish between that Irish pessimism, because you're always like, oh, we never get there, and, you know, the kind of realities of the game as well. It's kind of hard to balance both, because you're made and the emotions are just running so high because you care so much. But I was like,
I'm sure there's a world where we all have a different read of this game in a week's time too.
Yeah, but look, I don't want to dwell on it for too long, because we have a lot more important stuff to talk about than the time we have. But it's funny, it's just one of those things when you're in a stadium and they kept doing this, there was like a couple words and saying hop, hop, and the whole stadium was literally hopping up and down. Yeah. And I felt like, oh, this is turned too far, where there's no way they don't, surely they get one kind of thing. Yeah. And
like whatever lack of buy-in there was from the fans to the team, it sort of dissipated by the 75th, 80th minute. Like,
completely gone.
Yeah.
But again, it's funny, as soon as it hits the 80th minute then, I then go, they haven't had any major chances despite the pressure.
Yeah.
We might get out of this.
Yeah.
And you're kind of tempting fate, but you have to just do it.
Yeah.
When you're reporting on a game, you have to start writing up your end of match report.
And with the game of 2-1, Troy Parrott has that header.
The header, which is supposed, and yeah, that's another moment where
keeper saves it.
Yeah, Kovacs saves it. Kind of did he save it onto the post?
I think he just flicks it around. I think he does. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. Like you score then.
It's an amazing save.
And it's an amazing save.
It's amazing save. It's actually a brilliant effort.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those efforts where he's done everything he can do there. And it was the first long throw really that works throughout the night. I think it was O'Shea flicks it on towards him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he gets every ounce of strength behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the signal. And in the moment, that felt significant.
Yeah.
I have to say it did. And it's easy to say that in hindsight, but it felt as though, that would have killed it.
Yeah.
The goal eventually goes in. With 4 minutes to go, there was actually no monitors for us in the press box. We didn't get to watch back the foul immediately. Was it as soft as I'm seeing some people say it was?
To me, yes.
It felt very soft.
Again, though, you're disappointed because you're fouling a position where you don't need to foul in that, like the Czech player. I can't remember who it was, but. He's not going anywhere, and we just give him an opportunity to go down.
I was on the plane over, and I was talking to a couple of Irish fans, and descended into just a normal football conversation about pet peeves and football and all that sort of stuff. And the two of us, the guy I was sitting beside, both came to the conclusion that the biggest thing that annoys us in football is when a player is shielding the ball in his own corner, or he finds himself in his own corner, and there's just like a push or whatever, or like a needless foul. And I will say this wasn't one of those where it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you touching him? It did feel a little bit more soft than that, but it was funny just how it brought me back to that moment on a plane. But no, it was sickening.
And we should just say, obviously, Alan Brown, an operator on the pitch at that stage, Ryan Manning has gone off, and Jack Taylor's gone off in midfield
Both of them were on yellow cards, so I thought those substitutions made perfect sense, actually. A lot of people are thinking maybe Jason Knight might come on for Jack Taylor instead. I thought Alan Brown was probably the right choice personally, but Robbie Brady the same. It didn't obviously work out. Not probably the two of them didn't have their finest game as the game went on. We can probably touch on the subs a little bit after, but
So the cross goes in, and Ladislav Krejci, the captain, who I thought was kind of, I don't want to say by far, but he's definitely the best player on the pitch last night.
He's an annoying guy, isn't he?
I thought he was excellent.
He's annoying. Every time I watch him for Wolves as well, I'm just annoyed by this guy.
I saw Neil O'Riordan's tweet the other day saying, how are you letting a 14-year-old captain your nation? He looks extremely young. He's 26 years of age.
Yeah.
He looks extremely young, but he rises at the front post.
It's the back of his head, I think.
It's a free header, really, at the front post, which is something that Ireland defence will absolutely kick themselves, because they were excellent all night dealing with stuff in the air, and the ball drops in into the corner.
He attacks the ball so well.
He does, it's brilliant. Yeah. And he's not the biggest of guys at the back, but I actually think his presence in the air is quite good.
Yeah.
But yeah, the ball drops into the net, and it's just that feeling. The home fans send into chaos this time, and it's the away fans, the Ard fans, who are left dejected, and you just think all the momentum is with them now.
Begging for extra time at that point, to be totally honest, because you feel as though in normal time the mentality. No, it didn't. You're right, but in the moment, you feel as though that's only going to go one way. We're number 7 as a centre half, just as an aside, it's crazy work, but that's a story we can get into. But there's less pressing stuff to talk about.
I thought a couple of their subs were quite good with that. Sadly, because the one who delivers that ball into the box, he was only on the pitch 4 minutes before it.
Karabek
came on as well from Leon, basically switched from the back five to the back four.
Yeah.
He went up the right wing. Yeah. Him and Schultz played together for Leon.
Yeah.
The full time whistle hits, and I actually thought we did quite well to make the full time after that.
Yeah.
There could have been a swing in the other direction, but there was two subs obviously earlier, which we both agreed with when Jack Taylor and Ryan Manning went off for Robbie Brady and Alan Brown. The subs then a couple of minutes into extra time, Jimmy Dunn and Adam Eda come on for Cheeto Zegbeni and Seamus Coleman. Seamus Coleman was cramping up.
I was surprised Coleman came back out after 90, to be honest.
And I was surprised Zegbeni, to be honest, I thought Zegbeni had looked fit, but I did kind of think...
The Zegbeni thing was really weird, because it seemed as though, looking at him, we were like, oh, he might be a bit tired now, like, the minutes aren't legs. And then he'd just go and take a man on and get by, and he got into the box there at one point.
Yeah.
Just before he came off.
It was a Gareth Bale-esque.
Yeah,
he
Mark Bartra.
He actually ran around the fourth official and made his way back and got the ball.
I thought he was excellent again. He
must have won about 200 fouls last night. Throw-ins, corners.
He must just be a nightmare to play against, because he's quick and physical and strong. He never stops. He's honest as the day is long. He's just he's such an outlet for Ireland when they're struggling. We don't know what his fitness levels were like, or at the time, I guess, there's GPS stats and there's people checking all those things on the bench while it's happening, but I definitely wouldn't have taken him off. Definitely wouldn't have taken off. He's also better defensively than Adam Eda as well. Adam Eda is a striker, whereas Zegbeni is playing as a striker, but he's really a winger.
It basically ended up being 5-4-1, and Finazaz on the left, and Zegbeni was on the right, and that changed it to 5-3-2.
Yeah,
and Eda and Parra kind of playing off each other.
Did you feel like Al Grimson was kind of going for it like then? Because obviously, because the changes near the end of extra time felt to me that he wanted to win the game in extra time.
Yeah, I think Ireland did, and I think especially the second half of extra time.
I think the smart exchange was very indicative of that.
Yeah.
Well, he got, obviously the plan was Smartix was going to take a penalty as well.
Hopefully he's recovering.
He's taking a penalty, there was a slight miscommunication where Heimer Hal Grimson says, that Sonny Smartix is unconscious. But he meant to say was unconscious, and he's now conscious. He's in the hospital. He stayed, of course, in Prague. He's in the hospital with doctors looking after him. But he is conscious now, and hopefully we'll be okay. Our obviously thoughts go out to him. It's the first thing I spoke to James Coleman, the leader that he is. First thing that he says when we talk about the duels is, all our thoughts with Sammy right now.
Pretty crap challenge.
Awful,
and he looks at him. Check player.
He doesn't look at the ball at all. That was right in front of us.
Yeah.
And as soon as it happened, the referee, I think, wasn't even going to give a free kick originally.
Yeah. Where's VAR in that?
And you're asking me?
I don't know. I thought it was it's one of them ones that you're doing someone and he does them.
I don't think he intended to knock him out, but he definitely intended to do a bit of damage for sure.
Yeah. So it's getting on that, but just the subs in general.
Yeah, back to the original change there. Yeah, I thought, was it Dunn and...
Jimmy Dunn and Adam Eda come on for Cheeto Zegbeni and James Coleman.
Yeah, Jimmy Dunn at wing back.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand.
Who would you have brought on there instead of Dunn?
I would have brought on Jason Knight and thrown Alan Brown out on the right.
I would have done the same. Yeah. I know you're making another tactical adjustment in-game and Brown's moving from position that he's played in to a different position after coming on, but I think you have to do that. I think you
just have to do that. And it's not a slight on Jimmy Dunn either. No. It's again a similar thing that happened to Azaz early on in the campaign. It's putting a player in a position that he looks very uncomfortable in when Azaz is out in that wide left role, which actually at some points he picked up last night and was quite good.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Dunn just looked like a fish out of water a little bit out on that right hand side, and I don't know, obviously we don't know what the players are thinking and all this sort of stuff, but I got the impression sometimes there was a pass on and it was turned down because there just wasn't that kind of sense of we're going to gain a lot here by giving the ball out. Jimmy Dunn's had a smashing season, probably played more minutes than any other Irish player this year in 2026, and played right back a lot at the start of the season and was okay, but since he's moved back into that centre back bar for QPR, he's been brilliant in the championship, and I just think it was a very strange one.
The thing I'm thinking about is that obviously Hal Grimson spoke about this before the games, that you need big physical players, and that's why we nearly had a thought that maybe Boston Lowell might be involved. Okay, he obviously wasn't fit to play a part, but I think they're bringing on Jimmy Dunn because he's 6'4" and he's another, like, he's also
he's an athlete,
a threat in the opposition box, and he's also like an advantage in your own box. Maybe that's why they're bringing him on. I see that's maybe the reason.
Just obviously you could find logic in it for sure, but it just, it didn't work.
From the game's perspective, I think he's better with maybe a more ball-playing player. And that's not a slight on Jimmy Dunn or anything like that. He's just like, he's a centre-back or defender or like a right-back. Wing-back is obviously different, but like, just have maybe a bit of a ball-playing player there. I think it's very unlucky for Jason Knight not to get on the field at all last night.
I agree.
I think that would be a game would have suited him.
There's one more sub before the game, gets penalties, and Harvey Vail, obviously a proud moment for him, comes on to make his Irish debut. I did think at the time that Sammy Schmaderos was brought on to take a penalty. If you're going to take him off, it should be someone who's going to take a penalty as well, or is comfortable taking a penalty. I don't know if Harvey Vail was the next man up, but he wasn't in the first five. Sammy Schmaderos would have been in the first five, and I kind of thought, 3 minutes left to go in the game, you've already kind of not necessarily gone for it, but you've dropped Finn Azaz back into midfield too, where,
which is, you know, a great decision.
It's not his position, so you've already made that brave decision. I thought, could you throw if Johnny Kenny's comfortable taking a penalty, or another attacking player is comfortable taking a penalty, could you put them into that position and Smalley cinch yourself from too? I don't know, there's so many questions that we're going to have, that the Irish camp are going to have, even that they won't have answers for. I think for a long, long time.
The things I would do right now to actually be able to find out whether Harvey Vail was going to take a penalty or not, I would have loved to have seen him take one.
Harvey Vail, when he did come on.
Like, if we'd have got all the way to the 10th one, it would have meant that we were still in.
Obviously, he would have taken one then, but I think Smalley would have definitely taken one.
I know.
The first five.
I think Carl Grimson said that in last night as well. It's just a piece of unfortunate luck.
Just one of them, like, I think.
You know, very likely that Smalex could have taken the fourth penalty. And we'd be maybe a lot more hungover than we already are, kind of recording this podcast now. But yeah, it's penalties are,
they're a lottery.
I don't think they are, because you have to go up and you have to have conviction in your technique, you have to have the confidence to do it. I don't think they're like a complete lottery. Okay, there can be luck, but I think Ireland had a very unfortunate piece of luck just before the penalty shootout, which then affects the penalty shootout.
That's a fair point, yeah, and I would agree that I don't think they're a total lottery. I know you're saying you have to have conviction in your technique and all that sort of stuff. I don't actually think you do have to. I think you can get away with not having it.
Sometimes,
and there's definitely ways in which you can prepare for a penalty shootout to give yourself the best possible chance, but there was a lot of talk during the week, and it's funny, I was kind of hoping that, and I didn't actually think it would come to this point where we'd be reflecting on Hal Grimson saying that we're not going to practice penalties. I had no interest in that topic of conversation at all. Personally, you might be different. I thought, like, who cares? Like, I don't think it matters. It's fine. Like, let them at it. And I think it takes on life its own. You cannot get anywhere near replicating that scenario in any way, shape, or form. It can go both ways. If you say to lads, right, we're going to take penalties for an hour here, you could get a world where one lad scores a load of them, his confidence is through the roof, and he goes out and he's too confident. You have another thing where a lad might take 100 penalties and he might miss them all, and he goes out and he's thinking, I can't score a penalty, and then he misses. Like, you can look for whatever logical reason to justify your own opinion on how you should approach a penalty shootout, and you'll find. Evidence to support your own theory. There's a few more things to get onto within the penalties, but Finn Azaz obviously misses. Alan Brown obviously misses. Alan Brown, I think, would really struggle to get over what happened last night as far as the penalty shootout goes. Obviously, that's the second time that's happened. That's been well documented. We know that, but for me personally, on a personal level, like, I don't know Alan Brown. I don't know Finn Azaz, but. They should try their very best not to feel as horrible as I'm sure they do about it, because anyone who steps up and takes a penalty, regardless of how it ends up, I think that there's immense credit. And I think from within the camp, Troy Parrott mentioned it after that, these guys, they decided to step up, they're going to have our support regardless. And it is really tough, and it's horrible, and, like, you know, me saying that's not going to make them feel any better, but I have great admiration for what they did there last night, regardless of the fact that it didn't go too well for them.
I spoke to Nathan Collins last Monday, and I actually asked him about penalties, funnily enough, and I referenced that West Ham Brentford game the week that I was trying penalties against Thomas Souček, and he, the exact words he said to me, where he said, I completely agree with my manager Keith Andrews when he said any player who steps up Like, you should never ever go after a player who steps up to take a penalty. They've shown more confidence than anyone else has done, and they've been the ones putting themselves in the line, because there have been players sitting there who were, you know, breaking it, going, I don't want to take a penalty, potentially miss and face those consequences of the actions. And every single player who took a penalty last night took that decision to step up, to put the weight of a nation on their shoulders. Unfortunately, it didn't go their way. We'll just run through the penalties quickly. So Troy Parrott scores. That's a crazy, again, we've touched on his excellent, that scored. Adam Eda scores, Thomas Soucek scores, Robbie Brady scores, and then Mojmir Chittle has a penalty saved by Quivín Kelleher. What's going through your heads in the pub?
We're going absolutely mental.
Yeah, we're thinking, right, that's it. Like,
This is the moment. Yeah,
And
for sure.
Yeah, and then like Kelleher saves the penalty. You're like, of course he was always going to save at least one.
Yeah. Just on that, isn't that so great to go into a penalty shootout knowing our keeper's going to save one of these?
Yeah. Which was great. And
for sure. Man.
Yeah, and he saves that penalty, and then next thing you see Finn Azar coming up.
And for us, and it was like the jubilation within the place, and then it was like, he's running up. It was like we were celebrating, like happy that Kelleher had made the save. The replay cuts back and Nezaz is about to go. I don't know if it was ridiculous, but it felt to us, maybe it was just in the moment, it felt quick. And that's not too to suggest that it made any difference.
No, I'd say probably, look, when you're in the press box, you're not celebrating.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually sitting beside three Czech lads who were very gracious as well when didn't they the other end. Yeah. Didn't react a moment to try. And same with the full time whistle, he just shook my hand and said, oh, lucky, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, you're not celebrating. So immediately you just jot down what happened and you look back up. So probably there was a little bit of it, but it probably wasn't as quick as it seemed to be at home. When you're caught up in the elation.
I thought that might be the case.
Azaz, like, when he stepped up to take the penalty, I was like, this fella's got like 10 goals or something this year.
Yeah,
he's been one
consistent performer for the last 5 years.
Yeah, he's been one of the best players in the championship. He has got us to this position, as in, like,
With Parrott, Collins, Kelleher as your first name on the team sheet, like going into last night.
Yeah, those goals in Hungary especially, and he's grown into being one of our main players now.
Yeah.
And I was like, Azaz, I have full confidence. And
I did, yeah.
He has a bad penalty, he knows it. And it saves, but even at that, you're still thinking, right, okay,
we're back where we were.
Yeah,
it's funny. I take it, and Matija Kovács says it, and you mentioned there you're still in it. It's funny when you're in a stadium and you're in an away stadium, and as soon as Kovács says that, the fans behind start going nuts. And obviously, I've seen a lot of people reference online the sirens. That you might have heard on the TV.
Yeah, I saw a reference, I couldn't hear myself.
It's funny. It wasn't actually that loud in the stadium. The loud part was the whistles. The whistles, everyone in the stadium was whistling. So that was extremely loud. You actually couldn't hear the song as much. So I wonder, was it just near a microphone?
Maybe so.
Because I saw someone kind of mention, why aren't media who are there referencing it? It wasn't really that loud.
It's not that prevalent of a thing.
Yeah, and look, it's something that happens. But it felt like another seismic shift.
Yeah.
Even though it's back level, in the stadium, it just gave them... You know, when Chittle misses, it was the same feeling after the second goal in the stadium.
Yeah.
That feeling of, we're in real, the home man's thinking we're in real trouble here. Kovács gets them back in it, and all of a sudden it's
leaves. Yeah, and just looking at your notes here, obviously, and Sheik takes the next penalty, and that comes back to the lottery type thing that we discussed with the penalty shootout. Like, that is luck, complete luck, that you're next player up. And I know you put him there in that position, but they can't have anticipated that this is exactly how the penalty shootout would go. And then their, whatever number order is, the third, fourth penalty taker is going to miss, and then we're going to have Sheik to step up. Like, it worked out well for him. It was a great penalty. He never looked like missing. He's a cucumber, that fella. Yeah.
So Sheik scores, and then Alan Brown steps up. And look... there's no point getting away from it or trying to beat around the bush. This is now the second time this happened with Alan Brown, unfortunately happened against Slovakia.
Yeah.
In the European playoffs under Stephen Kenny. You're wary of throwing any sort of criticism at, and you'll never throw criticism at a player for missing a penalty, because as we said, they've put the weight of the nation on the back, and it's so easy to say, no, I don't fancy it.
Yeah, there will be people who will say you've decided to put yourself in that position, so you have to go and score, and you have to, you know, I can only have so much sympathy for you, because you could have said no if you didn't think you were going to go and be able to do it and put it in the back of the net. Now, I don't subscribe to that myself, but I can see the logic behind it.
Yeah, like, there was a little bit wondering, will he take one when they were going in? And I look, just on a hunch, I didn't think he would.
But Pally suppressed them quite often, didn't he?
Yeah, and we kind of had this debate last night briefly of, you know, who else would have taken one, and that kind of comes back to what I said earlier. When Sammy Schmandis comes off, I just think you put on someone who you know is definitely going to be in your first five penalty takers, and if that's Johnny Kenny, if that's someone else off the bench, maybe there wasn't an option for that.
Yeah,
maybe there was no one who was willing, you knew would be willing to take penalty. Like, obviously,
I hope you guys can hear them. Sirens, probably not. We just had some sirens go past the window there in reference to the penalty shootout. Obviously, the check could be police, could have been fire brigade, could have been ambulance are trying to do us in here.
Yeah, look, there's only so much you can really say about that penalty miss.
It's a bad penalty again, as he said, it's a bad penalty,
it's and he knows it. Yeah. And he knows it. Yeah.
Like, we don't need to go on about what he should have done and what he shouldn't have done.
I just want
I was listening to Alan Brown spoke a little bit in the lead up to this kind of qualifiers, not necessarily like in press conferences or anything, but some different journalists got speaking to him, and he said about having unfinished business in his Ireland career and maybe not getting exactly what he wanted out of it. I think this is going to be a real kick in the teeth for him, but I just hope he can take some solace in the fact that, you know, he kind of had been out of the picture and worked his way back in. And I know a lot of people didn't think that he was particularly good last night. I thought he was grand. I've seen him play far better this season. I think the game state was dependent on the game state too. I think if Alan Brown had started, I think he would have done similar to what Jack Taylor did. And I think if the roles were reversed and Jack Taylor was to come on, I don't think he would have done a whole lot better or a whole lot worse than Alan Brown. So I think as far as the actual 120 minutes within the actual normal game went, I thought he was grand. But I just hope he doesn't lose too much sleep over, because it's a very unenviable position to be in.
Saint Clement obviously steps up. Scores, sends the home fans into chaos, and Czechia will play Denmark on Tuesday. Matej Kovács is, you know, only a couple of days ago I thought his name was Matej Kovács. I will never forget the name Matej Kovács ever again in my life. It's a name that would be haunting my nightmares for a long, long time. Immediately after the full-time whistle, the Irish players just go over to the corner. The Irish fans are, it's pure dejection.
Yeah.
Both parts, both the Irish fans are clapping, and the Irish players are just sat there, heads on their hands, heads on their heads. They don't know what's going on.
Heads on their heads. You're right, yeah, listen.
Well, that's how it felt, really. Yeah. We were broadcasting at the time, and we were like, what do you even, where do you go about this?
How do you speak?
Yeah, how do you speak? You felt like you wanted to join them in that solidarity and just, you know, just applaud them and say you've given the nation a chance to dream again. When you're watching them in the corner, you can't help but you know, you're trying to be neutral, you're trying to do your job, but you just can't help but feel that utter dejection. And it's like there's just nothing. And we felt it against Slovakia a few years ago, to lose in a penalty shootout in a game where, again, like that game against Slovakia,
you feel as though you're better.
You should have won it. Yeah. You were the better team. Ireland know they should have won it. I spoke to Seamus Coleman after, and the very first thing he said is, we had a 2-goal lead. We threw it away.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that is exactly how the Ireland camp are going to feel today and for the next couple of days.
And it's a horrible thing too, in that they're not going to really have a chance to put this right for a considerable amount of time. Which is something that I suppose we can get into more detail on going forward. But obviously the Nations League games, we know the importance that they have to a degree, obviously not in the context of this. And the European Championships qualifying campaign is probably not going to hold the same amount of importance. I mean, it may end up doing, but probably not going to have the same amount of importance as a qualification campaign like this one or the ones that have come in recent times. So there's going to be a lot of healing to have to be done. The fans were, as far as we could see in the stadium from the singing and the reception they gave the players was excellent. That's to be expected. I mean, that's just what we do, and it's a great thing about us. There is a horrible bit about it where you're like, we're the greatest losers that kind of are around, and that's sort of our thing in a sense, that we go and we have a great time and everyone loves us being there, and then we end up not getting over the line. So it's just horrible. It keeps coming back. It's just heartbreaking, like, thinking back to it. But the fans did themselves proud of, for sure, and they always do.
Yeah, so. And the players too.
Of course.
And kind of everyone associated with the team, but it's just yeah, it's not really good enough to win it, to be leading a game 2-0. And you kind of, maybe that's what you don't deserve, maybe to win a game like that when you kind of throw away a 2-goal lead. But yeah, like the most annoying thing is that Czech team are no better than that Irish team, and this is such an opportunity to have one huge home game against Denmark, possible revenge,
right, a few more wrongs,
you know, and have that chance for this is Seamus Coleman's probably his last chance to get to a major tournament, probably the same for Robbie Brady,
John Egan,
yeah. But other than that though, you're thinking this is maybe the start of a new journey.
Yeah,
that's where we kind of are maybe looking forward to now.
Yeah, that's kind of how it felt. Yeah, I say how it felt after the game, like you felt dejection.
Yeah.
But you heard it from the players, and I heard Troy Parrott speaking about it. I spoke to Nathan Collins, and he literally just said, stick with us.
Yeah.
He's like, we have this connection with the fans. Yeah. We've always had this connection with the fans, but it just feels like it's gone through the roof with this campaign and with this squad. And like you said, so much of that squad is so young.
Yeah.
So young.
Yeah.
And they'll be around for a long, long time.
And
they're only going to grow from this.
Yeah, well, you would like to think so, and you'd like to think the scar tissue wouldn't cause any issues going forward, and I don't think it will. I think there's a lot of players with strong mentalities and a new era kind of Irish athletes that transcends football too, where there seems to be a switch up of why can't I be as good as anyone else, which is something maybe that has been thrown at Irish sports people in the past, that they don't see themselves as the equal of their counterparts from elsewhere, you know, and being able to go and achieve what others have. And I think there's a lot of players in there who definitely are of that mould, that they will grow from this. I said yesterday, about an hour before the game, that I think something, that the buy-in that has come for this team from the fans is something that I think is going to stick regardless of how the game went last night. A lot of young people there for their first away trips following Ireland, and not every experience is going to be like this one, which has been a bit of a whirlwind, obviously. Probably it will take a long time to get one like this, but I think there's going to be people, and a new generation of people, that maybe haven't been able to fall in love with an Irish football team in recent times, that now have done so, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, like from my limited interaction and dealings with the players, and I obviously don't know any of them personally, but like, they just seem like a great bunch of lads. Like, you know, I just wanted even more for them.
And at least patronise them if possible.
Yeah, it means so much to them. Obviously, it means so much to us and the fans and everybody else, and we get to be here for work, which is class, and we're very lucky to do it. But
we are fans at the end of the day,
and all those players play like fans, and that's the biggest compliment that I can kind of give them. They give everything. They gave everything for the shirt, and I suppose that should be the bare minimum. That should be the standard. But sometimes that was maybe lacking over the years.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's really turned around. It's from where we started this campaign and where we are now. Something has changed. The psyche of this team, maybe the psyche of the nation, has also changed. And you just hope for the players and this team that, like, everyone kind of sticks together and kind of backs them. Like, this is an opportunity now to go and do something and play at a home European Championships, to have a major tournament in your own stadium and be part of that. Like, what a carrot that is to have. And I know it's going to be really painful to be watching the World Cup this year and not be there and be pretty close to getting there, but you have an opportunity to play a game in front of your own home fans in Dublin in a European Championships. Like, what an unbelievable opportunity that is, and I hope everyone can get behind them again. I know it's our job to hold these people to account as well and kind of, you know, be critical sometimes, but yeah, it's just really devastating.
Yeah, it's very hard to be critical this morning, and you know, speaking to Hamer and the players after the game, Hamer actually said it to me, you know, he said it's so difficult. He said, we don't want to be speaking to the media right now.
Yeah.
And you completely felt that it felt cruel. Actually did.
Yeah.
But look, that's the job. They have to go up in front of the media after these sorts of games.
As far as that buy-in for the fans goes, well, that's important. Like, as far as getting the buy-in for the fans and feeling attached to a team, like coming out and speaking in moments like this. Nathan Collins, as we spoke about before, coming out and talking, very easy for him to hide away. And the same
breath if he didn't come out. You can imagine the rhetoric that would have come from that. Mm. So look, the players held themselves immaculately, I think.
Yeah, just before we wrap up, I know, look, we talked about the penalties and we talked about, you know, anyone who steps up has put the weight of the nation on the shoulders, and they've done what a lot of people wouldn't have done. I've seen some rhetoric online since the full-time whistle, which is absolutely appalling, absolutely terrible. And it's something that I probably, not to you kind of big ourselves up, but it's something I associate with, like, British football. Mm. I don't associate it with Ireland. And it's something that you're kind of disgusted to see, and you really hope that it stops and it doesn't continue, because it's not us, like, it's not in our DNA.
No, I haven't really seen much online. It's been a fairly hectic last couple of hours, but there it is, Xavier, and there's loads of idiots online. So
yeah,
it's a bit of an echo chamber as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And anyone that's been here, anyone that's been going to games, anyone that goes, you know, to the League of Ireland, anyone that, you know, follows Irish football with a passion, they are the true football fans,
yeah.
And they all know and understand, like, that you know, there's no stone left unturned. They left everything out there last night, and they've left everything out there over this campaign, and they just tried their very best. And, you know, those people who are online saying whatever, you know, like, good riddance. Like, I wouldn't even give them the one.
Yeah. I wouldn't have much more to add. I wouldn't have much more to add. I would just say it's important to highlight it, because obviously we don't want it to be happening, but, like,
yeah. Like, get off Twitter, get off social media.
Get to Prague. If you've been over the last couple of days, you've experienced what a brilliant kind of united atmosphere it's been on the team.
It's very easy just to be like, oh, we're all a great bunch of lads, and pat each other on the back, like, but tell you what, like, it's, you know, it shows you the goodness of people, like everyone here, like, it's just like that we bump into anyone that has, like, seen, you know, the off the ball pop shields and mics and stuff, and everyone's been so, like,
it has been great. Yeah, so it really has.
Everyone's been, like, you know, really, really nice. Just like people here in Prague have been brilliant.
Yeah, even like on a basic level, weaving your way through a busy pub and drink being spilled, and it's never even a thought of aggro. It's just
And can I just say the hosts have been excellent as well.
People
of Prague have been there's been no qualms about, like, you know, the city being taken over by thousands of Irish fans here.
I'm sure they're delighted with that
match. I'm sure there's obviously silent, but there was no kind of despair shown towards Irish fans at all. It's been excellent. We have the tantalising prospect of a friendly against North Macedonia on Tuesday, which I don't even think we want to talk about.
That's not one for next
week. Just before we sign off here in Prague and get back to Dublin, any final thoughts after that game last night? David, let's start with you.
Yeah, it's just a massive opportunity missed. A huge chance to, like I said, like, have one huge game in Dublin and get to a tournament. I think it's just, that's the most annoying and disappointing part about it, is that there was this, you know, prospect that we could have been at a World Cup, the first one for 24 years, and from the men's perspective, and it would have just been absolutely brilliant. And that's what's the most disappointing and dejecting kind of feeling around, is that it's just such an opportunity, and when are you going to get another opportunity like we had to beat Czechia away, and then a home game against Denmark? You would have bitten your hand off for that at the start of the campaign. It's been a mad campaign. We started on such a high before the Hungary game. They were 2-0 down after 10 minutes. We come back and draw 2-2. And then we go to Armenia, we get beaten 2-1, and one of the worst results in Irish football history. And it's like, we're ever done. And then I remember Troy Parra was injured, missed those games, and he comes back. It's like, oh, we just have to go and beat Hungary in Portugal. And then we did it.
Yeah.
And we did it, and then we got here. And because we're on such a crest of a wave, you're thinking we're going all the way to Mexico. But
yeah, we even got a World Cup draw.
Yeah, we even got a World Cup draw. And people have even booked flights.
Yeah.
But such is life. And it's been a mad kind of journey, but it's been, the only feeling you have now is utter devastation.
I'll try to keep it succinct. Like, devastation, heartbreak, as I said at the start, it feels like a sense of mourning, really, but a lot of pride, a lot of pride in the players, a lot of pride in
pride back in the jersey,
in the jersey, in Ireland, in the Irish people that are over here in Prague. I think everyone is, from coaching staff to players to fans to everyone in between. I think everyone can head home with their heads held high. The lads are set up to take the penalties and all of that sort of stuff. But it is. It's hard. There is an overwhelming sense of positivity in the sense that there seems to be a new generation of people now who have bought into what is the biggest thing in Ireland as far as sport is concerned, and maybe even beyond that. So that's a good thing. But as far as the campaign goes, it's a tough pill to swallow. But we'll be back.
We're always back. I don't think I want to add anything other than that. It's been a whirlwind couple of days. we've been like every Irish fan who's been here has been allowed the chance to dream. All you can ask for is hope, and they've given us hope. And look, when you get hope, you obviously get these moments. But that moment of hope just trumps everything.
And this moment that right now what we're feeling is awful. But I really hope in the summer of 2028. And we're all hopefully doing the same job. And we're all like looking forward at least to a home game in Dublin in the Euros. And it's not the World Cup, but like what an opportunity.
Yeah. Before we do wrap, I think with the start we said please don't click off as we relive what last night was. I think I feel much better now after talking through lots.
It's always good to talk about these things and get these things.
It's like therapy session.
I feel like this is like John McNally and
maybe we should take this forward to the podcast going forward.
This is myself.
I like it.
Maybe we should
we're not coming back.
Maybe just stop talking about football.
Stand the budgets.
I will be here until tomorrow, so if anyone does see me, I will not be having a mic. I might have the mic. I might bring the mic around, get some reflective thoughts from the people. But it's been great.
Thanks, Marion, to all the support of the last couple plays across the Off Ball page. It really has been brilliant from everyone.
You want to do one more read?
Yeah, the Green Sea and Off Ball is brought to you by Cadbury's, proud sponsor of the Republic Ireland football teams. Paint March Green. That is what we did over the last couple days here in Prague, a beautiful city. I'd actually love to come back and revisit this. I've been kind of fascinated by the buildings around this place and the atmosphere around it. The World Cup dream is dead. But Hamer Hagrim's men have allowed us to dream again, I think. So long, folks. Take care.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Paint March Green with Cadbury.